Hello and welcome to the Science Basement podcast. Or if you're listening for the first time, we're happy you clicked on that play button. It's December, officially winter, though here in Finland it's already felt like winter for a while. Probably not for you, Eliana, you're always warm. I'm honestly quite impressed.
Yeah, I have to admit I prefer cold weather than hot weather, so it's not yet winter for me until it goes minus 20 or something.
We're polar opposites.
Yes.
Sometimes I question my life choices for why I'm still here in Finland and not on some tropical island.
Yeah, well, I moved from a warmer climate here to the north and people question my choice.
Well, today we're not exactly talking about our life choices on the weather and climates, but instead we are having our festive episode. As per usual, actually, it's been a tradition for already a few years for us. And it's the one where we discuss the episodes from this year. But before we begin, let's just set up the mood a little bit, right? So let's imagine that we're sitting by the fireplace and it's snowing outside. Actually, I think it is snowing.
It was earlier.
Yes. So we don't need to imagine this. It is snowing, yes.
Yeah.
And maybe we can add some ambient sounds for the editors. We can add some ambient sounds.
Yes, editors, please add some very nice, cozy, crackling fire, a bit of rain, any sound to create
jingles,
a zen atmosphere.
It's snow. Is there any sound of
jingles,
snow?
Actually, yes, because it's a Christmas episode. Yeah. We should go with jingles.
And sitting to my left is Eliana. She has already been talking.
Yeah, you did hear my voice.
To my right is Rhiannon, our regular host.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our Christmas episode.
And we also have Sujai here with us, the new blood, so to say. And Sujai, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah. Hi, listeners. Hi, Anastasia, Rhiannon, and Eliana. I'm Sujai. I am a PhD student at the Institute for Atmospheric and Earth System Research at the University of Helsinki. I study aerosols, the smallest particles that are present in the ambient air that we all breathe. Mm-hmm. And I specifically study PM1, or particulate matter, which is less than 1 microns. And I also study particles that are larger than that. We are surrounded by these particles and we breathe them all the time. And I study the optical properties of these small particles so that we can understand what their impact on the climate is.
Well, maybe later on you will tell us more about this in a special episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I hope so.
But thank you. Yeah, we are very happy to have you with us. And today, as I already mentioned, we thought that since it's the end of the year, it would be nice to reflect on 2023 and share our favorite episodes of the Science Basement podcast. And the rule for us was to select only the ones from this year, from 2023. I must say it's been a very fruitful year indeed. And to make a short rundown, so what do we have? We had our main episodes. Mm-hmm. With guests talking about their research. We had a new thing, the spin-off. Eliana and I have been hosting that one. And just recently we finished with our High Life mini-series. So it's been really a lot of things.
Yeah, it has been a very productive year. Yeah. I was looking through our list of published episodes and I was impressed with how productive we were.
Yeah.
And the quality and the content. And it was very hard for me to choose.
I think when you look back as well, you realize, oh yeah, I did that episode this year. Because you did not doing a lot.
Right.
And then you, oh yeah, that was this year, wasn't it? And yeah,
it does feel like some of them, like you thought they were done like a much mm-hmm. longer time ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was very interesting to go through them.
And so Jay upgraded himself from listener to now a host as well. So
I'm a bit nervous actually, but
you'll be great.
Yes,
don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, it's no rocket science. I'm sorry for all the rocket scientists out there listening.
Yeah, as a space physicist, they tend to say it's not brain surgery. Yeah. Rocket science feels much closer to me.
On the other hand, there are many episodes to pick from, right? But at the same time, it's because there are so many good ones that's also makes it even harder, probably. But what about you guys? So did you have to flip a coin also to pick the one, the favorite one? Or did you just follow your heart? Or what was your guidance here?
Well, I didn't flip a coin, but to be honest, I did spend a few minutes bouncing between two episodes on the main series. The one because it was closer to the research I'm doing. So obviously I have an extra love talking about that topic, and it was so much fun to do so on the day we recorded. But then eventually I went with an episode that brought me some new knowledge, and I won't say yet what it is. Stay tuned to find out.
Oh, cliffhanger. For me, it was actually like not too hard. And that's because the episode I chose, which I also won't give away right now, but there was another reason apart from the actual content that I really enjoyed about it. So I was involved in it.
Stay tuned to find out. Too many cliffhangers, too many cliffhangers.
I really like the, I mean, I'm not going to give the title out now, but episode that really hits home because it's about a diet, and I really tried that diet. Oh, and it didn't give me really good results.
Oh,
so I was kind of really interested what the science behind it is, because this is just anecdotal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just me talking about my own health.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I really wanted to know what happens when this diet is, you know, tried by a big enough sample size.
Yeah,
I think you sort of already spoiled the episode.
Yeah, I think people know which episode
but
this
is. Let's pause so that we don't give away too many things. And maybe Anastasia, you can tell us, was it easy or difficult for you to choose an episode?
Actually, I wanted to have a disclaimer because I loved all the episodes. And I was like, I don't feel like I should be choosing one because...
No favorites allowed.
I mean, I'm sorry, but especially the ones that I participated in, there's like so much emotional attachment related to them, because a lot of people I knew or some people I met for the first time, and we have pre-recorded meetings with them. So to some extent, you get to know them, you get to connect with them, and every episode is very precious. So I chose one because that's sort of the agenda for today, yes. But I must say that all of them are precious and all of them are very, very good, in my opinion.
Good points.
Yeah.
But maybe without further ado, since Sujai gave away too many things, maybe you can start telling us what your favorite
I
want to
hear more developments on that one.
Yeah. So it was interesting. It was a talk by Topi. The episode was with Topi, and he said that
Topi Hovinen.
Yes. Hovinen. Yeah. So he said that he finds a lot of younger people are adopting the vegan diet in Helsinki in recent years, and I think his data from daycare facilities said that they don't really find much of a difference in like deficiencies in children. But then again, that was only one ethnicity, and I think he's looking at future data where you'll have more ethnicities from the daycare. However, I mean, from my personal experience, I did try the vegan diet at some point, and I was fatigued all the time. So I don't, maybe I was doing it wrong and stuff, and I know he talked about, you know, vitamin B12 that you need to take externally because it's not found in plants except some algae thing that he was talking about.
Yeah.
How long did you follow it up?
Why did I?
No, how long?
How long? I tried that for a year and then I gave it up.
You know what I'm thinking is like, because it's different when you're a young child and you are adopting a diet. But when you're an adult like us, maybe it's suddenly a shock for the body because it had this source of nutrients from meat. It had gotten its routine in digesting and separating the nutrients.
True.
And now you move to a diet that doesn't include this. And maybe this way it was influenced.
But I tried that as a teenager, actually, not as an adult.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, a bit in between. I also know people that who... either vegetarian or vegan, tried the diet. And I think some, like, for example, if you're low on some other things, like I know, for example, with women, they very commonly have anemia due to the menstrual cycle. But I know some people who did become vegetarian or vegan, and then it really also made them very fatigued because it was less, they had a lot less iron from the meat because they're not eating meat anymore.
Yeah.
So they either had to have supplements or some of them actually had to start eating meat again, which...
I think,
on the reason you become it, but obviously this can be a bit hard if you actually don't like it. But I think it is a good point because it really does depend on. And I think
he talked about that, right? Women during pregnancy are advised to take external iron supplements.
Yeah, and folate.
Not only during pregnancy. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting the lovely conversation, but I am someone who has suffered from iron deficiency, and especially in my youth, I had to eat more red meat than a regular person, or otherwise I would have to get supplemented iron, which is comes in a liquid form, and it was horrible to consume, and I was like 14 years old, so it was a bit too much for me to push myself to have something that doesn't taste good. So I opted eating more red meat, and I understand why this could be a conflict for someone who is young and starting a vegan diet. And
doesn't liver have a lot of iron?
Yes, I was eating actually liver. By doctor's prescription, I was consuming more liver.
Yeah. I was actually feeling so sorry for you. I don't like liver at all.
I like the taste. Please don't come after me.
So Jai, I was going to ask as well, because I was, well, I was, me and Anastasia were both actually the host in the episode, so I guess I do have a bit more... background to the episode, but a lot of also what Toppy was talking about was these what we were discussing was actually the event, like the known knowledge and kind of resources available to learn about what supplements or what you kind of should be more like wary or take more precautions into when you're having the vegan diet, for example. Vitamin B12 as well as the other ones we've mentioned. And when you started your vegan diet, sorry, going back to your anecdote, were you aware of this or not, because it's very interesting.
It was something that was in vogue, I guess, and I just tried it for the heck of it, so I did it without any scientific analysis.
But I think it brings up a good point, and it's kind of also what was mentioned in the episode, that it's quite a new way of eating and a diet in terms of, like, I know that certain people eat maybe less lactose or you know, certain things, like people won't eat lactose but they'll get other things in, like their fish or their meat, but vegan is very specific as it cuts a lot of food groups out. So I think one thing that Toppy was also mentioning was like the, like, or we were discussing, was the importance of this research and the fact that these materials aren't always available for people who do become vegan, for maybe the issues about like want to protect the animals or the environment. And I think it's quite important in this respect. So
one should enter, I guess, these diets with an open mindset of also not only I'm cutting those foods, if there are things from these foods that my body needs, then I need to introduce them by supplements, because many people might make that mistake.
Exactly. And I think also in the episode, sorry, I'm hijacking. I am now talking only about the episode. But I don't know if you also remember this bit, Sajai, but he also mentioned things that actually vegan people get more of as well. So like there is benefits to the vegan diet a lot. And I think it does come back to the point that really it depends on your own body and what you have too much or too little of anyway in your normal diet.
Actually, I mean, in India, there are a lot of people who are vegetarian. Because of religious reasons mainly. But the good part about being vegetarian is that you can at least drink milk and consume dairy products. So vitamin B12 deficiency is still something that a lot of vegetarians don't have to deal with if they are at least drinking milk. However, I mean, if you are eating a vegan diet, then you need to take care of those things.
Mm-hmm. But now that you listen to the episode, would you go back to try it again with more like educated
approach? I mean, I probably, I don't know. I mean, I do like the taste of meat, but I'll try to reduce my current meat consumption, surely, because you can have a balanced diet mm-hmm. if you take, you know, care of vitamin B12 and your iron and folate and these things. So with some external supplements, I think vegan diet is not at all a bad diet, I mean, scientifically.
That was interesting.
It's nice because in a way it's kind of a feedback on the episode. It's
that's true.
It I would you. Like to encourage the listeners to submit more.
Yeah, yeah.
We want more. So Jai gave an example here.
If you have any other comments, please get in contact. Maybe I can talk about my episode.
Because it is sort of related, I guess, to nutrition.
Well, I mean, it's still in the human biology.
Yes.
Field. My episode was actually the first episode of this year about diabetes. So a bit of background to this episode. I recorded it with alongside Giuliano, and we were interviewing Tom Barsby, who is a PhD researcher looking into diabetes. And some background, I guess, on the episode, what it was about. So we were discussing much more molecular biology. So the difference, firstly, what is diabetes and the difference between the type 1 and type 2, which I know and I think most people kind of have been introduced to these two kind of broad terms. And the type 1 is kind of more genetic, so it's more when you're younger and it's actually an autoimmune disease. And the type 2 is more linked to your lifestyle, but they can, of course, be genetic predispositions to type 2 diabetes. But actually something interesting that he said was that there's actually more types. Obviously, we didn't get into it in the episode because time is limited, but I found this quite interesting because I always thought there was just two types of diabetes. But yeah, that's a side note. And his main research was making these beta cells, which are hormone-producing cells in our bodies that produce insulin. And insulin is needed as a molecule which, when our blood sugar increases after a meal, it regulates it and tells neighbouring cells or other cells in the body to use up this glucose. And his research was looking into making a new cure. But the interesting part for this cure was that it was using people or like individuals' own body cells, so their stem cells, which have not yet been made into any other cell, so they have the capacity to become any other cell. And this would obviously be a great cure because then it can be your own body. So there's no like limitations or less limitations and risks to this kind of treatment. And in theory, it's kind of curative. Although this word cure is a very big word. So we won't stress it too much. But it was very interesting as it's not necessarily like a pill you take, as we see in most treatments, but actually a way to kind of really use your own body to help your own disease.
And you can use your own cells, because with stem cells you can just take cells from your own body and then turn them into stem cells and then convert them back into being like something else.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what he was exactly doing in the lab.
So there's no problem of rejecting, because usually when you have organ transplants there is an issue that there would be immune reaction mm-hmm. to this new organ, like a foreign body literally being there. So in this case, because you're using your own cells and turning them into beta cells, that's like
it's much
more tolerated by the body.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is kind of like training or teaching your cells to perform a new function or enhance a function they already had. Remind me, because I don't remember.
Yeah.
Can I give an analogy of origami?
Yeah.
So, for example, you have an origami and it's folded as a paper crane, you know, like these Japanese ones. And then you unfold it to make just a flat paper. And then you fold it into a flower. So this is kind of what is going on here.
Nice.
So you first are taking a differentiated cell, a crane, and then on a plate, you turn this into a stem cell, so basically a piece of paper unwrapped, and then you can put it in, it can become something else, like a flower.
That's a very nice example, very
visual. Very, very visual example.
Yeah, something that people can visualize. But I have a question based on that. So mm-hmm. now it's like I'm doing an interview for that episode. Yeah. Sorry, guys. Because if you take an origami yeah. and then you unwrap it into the flat paper you begin with, you have all the wrinkles from its previous form. Ooh, how yeah. do these interfere with the new
well,
shape?
The
Did
thing,
you discuss
yeah,
that?
Yeah, this is a thing that we actually discussed because a lot of what they're doing in the lab is not only they have to reprogram, as you can say, but they have to make sure it actually becomes the thing that you want at the end. So
yes.
for an analogy that we used in the episode was that it becomes like a duck that can quack, not just a duck that looks like a duck, but it actually does all the thing a duck does.
Okay.
And for example, like you also want to make sure that this cell doesn't react to other things in the environment. So it doesn't then react, even though it looks like it should do, it doesn't react to something like, you know, simple in your blood, like salt. It's not then secreting insulin in response to salt, for example, because imagine this would not be great.
Yeah.
So you have to, like, there's lots of things that they have to have these quality control checks, but it was being used in some patients, but there was still a long way to go for it to be completely tried and tested before it can be really approved and yeah used widely clinically. And again, there's lots of things they have to check with the follow-ups and stuff because it's not being used widely, so they don't know. But it's very exciting and very
it's very one cool. step forward at least.
Yeah,
it has a promising future and maybe something the future TSP podcast yeah. hosts
Revisit.
Can follow
yeah.
up
yeah, exactly
like in a
yeah.
few years from now yeah. interview someone who has taken this research a notch further.
Yeah definitely. And one other thing I wanted to mention about this episode, which I did hint at before, which isn't necessarily in the kind of content, but I love this episode as well because it was the first one that I had done in person, because before this time, I mean, I wasn't a host that long before this, but even before this, we were all doing them through Zoom. So it was very nice to have like the in-person interactions and kind of learn how to do a podcast as a host and even as to record in with in-person equipment and also feel much more professional.
That's
nice.
True. Because speaking of like the episode I would choose from our main mm-hmm. series, because I have two choices and I will come to that a bit later, but from our main series, I also chose an episode that has to do with, let's say, an in-body behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first episode I recorded in person, and I totally agree with you, Rhiannon. It gives a completely different atmosphere
yeah.
and the feeling of the interaction with the persons around you. It's completely different than Zoom, because now you have like this movement in 3D space, and it's way more engaging
in
that sense.
Has its own issues because setting up the equipment is such a pain in the neck sometimes, but it's a challenge that once you sort of optimize this, it kind of becomes much nicer.
Yeah, and at least no internet issues.
Yes. How many times we had internet glitches recording via Zoom? Let us not go down that
that's
rabbit
another
hole.
Podcast episode.
Yes.
And I think we all have reached some sort of saturation in the last couple of years with Zoom lectures and Zoom classes. And
it's nice to just see people in person as well when you're interviewing them and actually get to know them a bit more.
Yeah.
Yes. I think some people just got too deep into this. A lot of people is very hard to go in person, and they would still stick to online meetings and
mm-hmm.
would like pretty much plan everything, taking into account that they will do it online. And
I think workplace dynamics have changed forever now,
yeah.
post-pandemic.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of places have like just gone back to, you know, like hybrid working.
Yeah.
And they are just not going to revert back to just conventional that you check in at 9 and leave at 5 sort of working style.
But I have to say this about what you just mentioned, Sujay. It's the problem with the pandemic, and it left us with this idea that we can have a hybrid working environment, for example.
Yes.
Then you can go to some meetings in person and some take them on Zoom online or on any other platform.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that, though, is that suddenly my calendar is never empty, because People who would opt to just communicate via a few emails before, they say, let's have a meeting, and then let's have a follow-up meeting. And then my calendar, as being a junior PI and a bit more senior and having too many probably collaborations, many reasons to fill up my calendar with meetings, that I miss the times where we would fix some meetings in person in the office room down the corridor or travel somewhere for a few days just for that reason. And then the rest of the days, I could be left alone on my desk with my computer and my notebook. Yes, people, I still write with pen and paper sometimes and just do science, you know, write a piece of code, let it run, keep some notes on my notebook, and then go home and I'm happy. Now it's like, oh, I have this meeting on Zoom and I'm drained afterwards. And don't let me go down that rabbit hole as well.
It's pros and cons.
Yes.
Like with the podcast.
Yes. Anyway, sorry. Sorry for the distraction.
I will just add one more thing, is that I like the pros and cons also of online stuff is that I really, really enjoy the fact that some conferences were online.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially like if there were some seminars, people would record them and I would go and rewatch them if I didn't manage to attend them on time. And so to me, like the information became more available at least for those lectures and that they had recorded.
Yeah, yeah. That's so true. In that regard.
But I still enjoy going to conferences and like nothing substitutes in-person connection. Yeah. There's just no way, unless maybe we are holograms. I haven't tried that, but we'll see. We'll see how much this advances. Eliana's face is already scared. It's like, nope.
I'm not never trying that. I'm happy to be a three-dimensional human being.
But Eliana, since you already sort of
I kind of started,
so maybe you can continue with your pick.
Right, so indeed, as I was saying earlier from our main podcast series, I enjoyed a lot the episode that I recorded together with Katia. And it was our first in-person episode and we interviewed Beatriz Portinha. And she talked to us about the secret of ants' resilience on changing climate.
Oh, I love that episode. Yes.
It's so amazing, right? So so to give a summary to our listeners who might not have heard the episode yet.
Then you should.
Exactly. Thank you, Anastasia. Please go and listen to it. It's a really good episode because essentially what researchers found is that there is a species of ants that has a gene that makes them more resilient to cold weather, or they can adapt to colder climate. And there is another family of ants that can adapt to warmer climate because of having a similar gene. And now if a parent from each group of ants mate with each other, their offspring will have the benefit of being able to adapt both to cold and warm temperatures. So there is a lot of research being done at the moment trying to understand how this gene works. And we all know that we are heading fast forward to climate change and looking back to the history of our planet Earth. Like every time we had some extreme climate variations, many species got extinct because food was scarce, the temperatures were not appropriate for what these animals and organisms were made for. So knowing that there is a species on this planet that has figured out how to adapt to changing temperatures, and us gaining knowledge on how us as humans adapt to the changing temperatures, not only by making our houses warmer, which quite often increases our carbon footprint, but also like genetically our bodies, how can they evolve to that direction? So that's what got me thinking. It's like, where are we heading in the future? Like, can we help our bodies to maybe adopt this gene or activate it if we already have it in our genome, like activate it, and then therefore as human beings, we can adapt better to climate change. And the same goes for animals.
I don't think you need to activate that one, Eliana.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Maybe me, yes.
Right, maybe that's why.
Maybe you should be studying.
Maybe that's why I like this episode, because maybe I do have this gene activated for tolerating cold weather. But the climate change is going to be much hotter and hotter and hotter, and I cannot tolerate hot weather.
Yeah,
so I do need to activate that gene in me as well, Anastasia.
I'm in a bit of a pickle because I like a perfect 25 degree temperature. I'm the spoiled baby that like needs this very narrow range. I think I'll become extinct very fast.
Then let's progress gin research. Yeah,
an anonymous sponsor to that research all of a sudden after this episode.
I was just going to also mention part of the episode that I liked as well. Was the fact that these ants, I think, was mentioned that they are some
keystone species.
Yeah, keystone species. I was like, what was the phrase? Keystone species. So they're like basically needed for the ecosystem. So
yes,
it's quite cool that they have learned to adapt, because then it means that hopefully the other animals, they'll still be providers for the rest of the ecosystem.
You see, Rhiannon, I went more with the sci-fi direction and you went more with the tangible angle of this topic. But I have to also make another comment. It's not per se on the content of that episode, but kudos to Beatrice. She made such a good job describing her work.
Yeah.
She had so many fun facts. I was thoroughly entertained. Yeah. And she had already come up with examples that are more familiar with people to explain about hybrid species, where you have a parent from a different, slightly different species, or like your parents are from a slightly different species than each other. And she did an excellent job. Yeah. I really enjoyed interviewing her.
She also had a blog in the science basement on the same topic, so you can also read a bit more on that. Yeah. So you can listen and also get some notes from there. Also, because I was helping to make the social media post for that one, she was very generous also with the pictures that she provided of herself, like with the ants and all those plates and the ants themselves. And I was like zooming into those pictures, and it was a very nice resolution, at least on the computer. I was like looking at these cute little eyes, like so cute, so adorable. I don't know. It was very sweet.
Very creepy.
Never thought in my entire life that someone would say ants look cute and adorable.
You'd be with me on that.
No. I mean,
no.
Okay, yes.
When you see this giant mound in the forest, this is like...
There is actually a funny...
I'm visualizing like a meter.
Yeah. Well, they can be very tall, and I did share a fun story in the episode where it was my first time like in these northern countries where they actually have these big mountains of ant nests, because in Greece they are tiny.
Yeah.
But here they're huge and above the ground, like a big blob on the surface of Earth. And yeah, I stood close to it, and suddenly I swarm of ants started climbing up my body. Yeah, it was
they were taking you back.
the episode was meant to be, see? They already chose you for it.
Yes, yeah. Ants had already chosen me to make that interview.
Actually, there was one horror movie, I believe, about ants, that there was like also a huge mound, and then somebody fell down there and the ants ate the body, like to bones.
Exactly. And they probably would.
Still cute, though.
Actually, I don't know.
Please stop. Ants crawling up on me.
If you hear any scratching in the background, that's why.
That's Eliana scratching her forehead.
Well, my pick, though, was not focused necessarily on one fact. I think the one that appealed to me was the one which involved, like, more of a... I think it was just more like an encyclopedia. Okay, basically, it was with Christopher Jackson, who, I don't know if I mentioned this, but he's actually my supervisor. He was my supervisor in the beginning of my PhD, and he is the master of microscopy. He is really, really good at imaging. So basically, like, into zooming in to all these structures and looking at the tiny little details to the world, really, that we don't see with the naked eye. And he, over the years, accumulated so many pictures that he decided that why not make it a book? And the book is really stunning visually, of course, because there's so many high-quality images that of things we didn't even realize that this is what, like, a table saw looks like, or there are these creatures in the water, you can just collect a sample and see them. But also that he put a lot of information on these things so you can just scroll and see beautiful pictures and at the same time educate yourself on very interesting new facts. And like being a curious person, I felt like this is like, it's perfect. It's for really a hungry brain, like information hungry brain.
Yeah, I also was re-listening to that episode in preparation for this episode. It's a bit of a episode
very matrix responsive there.
Said episode too many times. And it was interesting as well with the colours that you actually choose the colours of these like images, basically. So, which is quite weird to think about, because obviously, like, in kind of, how do I say this, normal sized...
Yeah, like in the real world, you don't choose the color.
Okay, everything you see with the bare eye, yeah, you can't, exactly, Eleanor, you can't choose the color. It's just the color it is. So this was a bit mind-blowing, because I was like, you can choose the color of something, but the real color, I guess, is just gray because it's so small. Or
so small, kind of, yes, and also because the tools don't really allow you to get that color.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, that's what I mean. So it just kind of makes it as... like black and white. It's almost like TV back in the day.
I used to be black and white. So to me, that's not necessarily
it's fine,
a problem.
Yeah, but I just kind of, like, I've seen some of images. I've never used microscopy, but I've seen some images, you know, like just being a PhD student in molecular biology. But it's quite funny that you can choose, or like someone has chosen a colour for something and this sticks as the colour of it. And it's like the power.
For me, it's a very common thing, because in astrophysics and solar physics, where my background is, usually the wavelengths we observe also a structure in. It's not in the visible light, so you would not see the colors because it's not part of your like eye spectrum, like the spectrum, the eye sensitivity, the visual spectrum. Thank you. And so we always assign a color to a wavelength range because it's a way for us to distinguish between the different wavelengths. But that doesn't mean that this is the color the object has.
Is that what you call false color composites? Or something?
I haven't heard the term, so I don't call them like that. Okay. I don't know if they do.
Because, like, I have done a bit of remote sensing, like, played around with satellite data, and sometimes you have these images that are not really the color they really are. So you have to assign them a color.
I think that might be that, yes.
Because it's especially helpful if you're taking, like, hyperspectral data, basically data with, you know, which has wavelengths beyond, again, the visual spectrum. Yeah. And you try to figure out droughts and, you know, some kind of disease which a crop is having or things like that from satellite images.
So it's satellite images of Earth where you study crops and stuff. Cool. Yeah, because essentially that's what we do. Like, for example, I study the sun, and quite often a lot of the interesting things I am studying are... observable in extreme ultraviolet wavelength. So this is beyond the visual spectrum. So we assign colors, and then it depends on the telescope or the spacecraft that has the telescope taking the images. Sometimes there are tone variations or hue variations, and so when you see an image of the sun, you automatically know which telescope got it because of the color that is assigned to that filter. But of course, it's not a rule, because nowadays, like when you do an analysis on a paper, you want to have everything in the same color if they represent the same wavelength. But at least for the sun, there are a couple of telescopes that come to my mind where there are slightly differences in the colors assigned to the emissions.
But I like that you can choose your own color sometimes. It kind of unleashes your creative personality.
Yeah.
It's like you're in a Bob Ross.
So long you're good with colors, jellies.
Not if you're selection. Blind, might be a bit tricky.
As long as I personally don't go into the range of blue and green.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's because I'm pretty bad at distinguishing these two colors.
Anastasia, I also had another question for you regarding this episode. What was it like to interview someone who had written a book, like an author in the scientific way? Because I've never interviewed an author or anything, and I thought, like, it's quite an interesting...
It was surprisingly challenging for one reason, is that Chris is very modest. And I think he should have been more out there in a way.
Okay.
So his book is very beautiful.
Yeah.
And when we went to a conference together, he was there. He even brought the book and I told him, I was like, why don't you just put it on a table? People can scroll mm-hmm. and appreciate. And he didn't do it. And my supervisor, still till maybe like a month ago, didn't even know that he published a book. Wow. So I was like, you need to be active with this. So he was really enthusiastic, mostly to discuss the facts that he wrote about, because he's just so much interesting information, like all these samples he observed. At the same time, this humble nature.
Yeah. He needs a hype man.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, like, exactly. So hopefully we helped him in some extent.
Yeah, yeah. I think in our modern society, we have learned not to show off too much of the things we have achieved because of how it might make others feel. I think at least that's how I was brought up, like never go around saying, oh, I did this and I want that. And I was like, yeah, but if you do something, and why not promote yourself and what you did? In that case, goes like that. But also I have to make a comment, Anastasia, I'm sorry. It's very obvious you're a technology person because you said scroll for a book instead of flip through the pages. So I had to say that in case our listeners picked it up too. I was like, I heard it and immediately was like, scroll, flip through the page.
I feel all called out right now.
So now we know that addiction. You are a Kindle reader. You only read books on Kindle or your laptop.
Do you read books a lot on Kindle and laptop and stuff
I
like
try
that?
To convert myself, yes, to read more through an iPad. I invested into an iPad. Yeah. So
hence, scrolling.
That explains. Yeah.
That explains
I do enjoy a printed version, of course, more, though I try to save on paper. Well, you can see I have next to me a 40-page review, which, as I told Rhiannon today, it's not really a review anymore. It's just a book chapter that was published in the journal.
Is it single column? Or double column?
It's double.
And it's 40 pages
double. It's 40 pages, yes.
Because I was going to say, my current paper is under review. It's over 30 pages, but it's a single column.
Oh, God bless your readers.
I am very grateful to our reviewer for patiently reading through it. Let's say it like that. Anyways.
But Ileana, I want to ask you, because we obviously started this new thing on the podcast, and maybe a little bit like your feelings overall on how the spin-off has been going and the fact that currently it's on hiatus, so I hope somebody picks it up. But what do you think? What are your emotions?
Well, first of all, I have to say thank you very much, Anastasia. I'm very grateful because you joined the team. And this was an idea I had thrown on the table and people were interested. But of course, it takes more time than just interviewing someone to prepare to have an episode where you do mainly the talking. Because we had some guests, but half of the episodes, it was just the two of us.
And just the two of us. We can make it if we
don't
try.
Make me sing. I have a terrible voice.
Well, I just didn't.
You did, yes. So yeah, it was, for me, it was a blessing. For me, it was like amazing that you joined and we started that together. It was an outlet to a lot of emotional pressure and a lot of frustration that had accumulated in me, because academia is not a paradise. And as almost still early career scientist, there were so many things along the way that I had questions about, that I had a lot of frustration about. So it was very nice that we discussed that. And we had many cool episodes about supervising, being supervised, which is very useful for me starting now, having my own PhD student and supervising her. And so it was very nice that we touched an array of topics, but my most favorite one was about harassment in academia.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's when you let yourself loose.
Right? I let myself loose in that one. So I came extremely prepared, I think, for about 3 weeks in my after work hours, I was reading nonstop scientific research reports that have been written to collect like everything about the data, the case studies, and have the facts.
Yeah, and I guess
not just
is,
the emotions.
That is one difference between when you're just talking yourself, whilst we where we normally interview people, because they have the facts and the knowledge. We just guide them through the science communication, whilst in this sense you have to
learn
it yourself.
There was no one there to ask, so what are the statistics telling us, or is there a study, or did you do a study?
Yeah.
No, now I had to collect all this information and share it out, and having myself experienced, let's say, unpleasant cases in academia personally, or through the stories of others in my surroundings. It was a very emotional episode. It hit right home, and I tried to express the emotions I felt while at the same time keeping some facts. Yeah. So how did you feel about it?
I felt very overwhelmed when I came there, and Eliana had like several papers of text there.
Why were you there?
I mean, I did read it as well, but I must admit, like, not to the same level. And at some point, she's like, was like flipping the pages, and they were catching up in the microphone. And then she would be like, pass me the page as well.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. We can talk.
I have
about
a face for you.
just hanging around.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that was... I mean, I certainly learned there as we were going on with the episode too.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't really pick a favorite one for the spin-off, because I liked all of them, and I decided that at least for the spin-off, I don't have to tear my heart and pick one. So, but it was an interesting experience because it was a different style. So I got to try myself in interviewing people, at the same time having more of a like this freestyle two of us sort of podcast. It was very interesting to meet other people and just have a more chill out talks, because I feel like when it's science communication, then people become a little bit more tense, because okay, they now need to deliver true facts. But when they're just expressing their own opinions or experiences, then they become more talkative or relaxed. So in this way, I feel it was much easier to have even guests on a podcast.
Yes, I agree on that. You could see that they didn't come prepared in the sense of like, I need to be very careful not to mess a number or a scientific result we got. It was more about talking from experience, how you have experienced like a given situation in academia. And that was very cool. And I think you also did pour a bit of your heart on the episode of how or why we flee academia.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that if you were to pick an episode, you would pick that one. But maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe because I'm still divided whether I should not. I do like academia. But let's not know. If I start now, it's going to be like another spin-off episode. So I'm going to say that I was thinking of choosing actually the... leadership and mentorship, no, actually supervision episode. But I would say then here by extension also I have to mention the high life episodes.
Yes.
Because they in a way felt like part of the spin-off.
Yeah.
It's just with more hosts and more guests coming on, but a lot of topics that we discussed there were still academia related. It was not necessarily science communication, and I learned a ton from those. And again, here I didn't pick a favorite one, but just so many things that I even like when I was listening again to the episodes, like, yeah, we did talk about that, and it's just a lot of things I started sharing with my colleagues, and I started noticing that all my colleagues are going through this, and now I can actually give them an advice based on what I learned from these experiences and from these episodes. So if anything, I guess my colleagues can also thank all our guests.
I second that. The High Life episodes were really interesting also for me because it gives you an idea of how to manage a big scientific organization, like when you're at the top of it. And it was very interesting to learn the practices and the experience mm-hmm. the senior researchers and PIs had in this process. So, yeah, it was an educational series for me. So our audience.
And also for me, like the different aspects of it. It's like, for example, mentoring is kind of something that everyone does, but also how that links to a certain organization and things like that, and even just running a certain organization, what it involves and different aspects of it, like within such an organization, is quite interesting and very different.
I like the episode on misinformation in science because I think that's a very big issue, especially, I mean, again, I don't want to keep bringing up COVID-19, but during that period there was a lot of misinformation and then there were even some famous podcasters who were, you know, like I don't know if sued is the right word, but certainly a lot of people and famous artists and stuff said that we are not going to, you know, put our songs on this platform because this platform hosts this podcaster who is being spewing misinformation about COVID-19.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I'm not taking the names of the artists and the podcaster and the platform, but I guess a lot of the listeners would know whom I'm talking about.
And or again, you can just Google it yourself.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's a good point. I was gonna say, like, for the spin-off, obviously I wasn't involved, but I think it's very nice and important topics, like kind of when we do the regular episodes, it's much more to give early career researchers the chance to, one, share their research and also learn how to do the science communication. Like, that's the main kind of point of the Science Basement podcast. And I think this is a really great platform for that. But the spin-off was really nice because it also gave this other side of important things that maybe researchers, especially early career researchers or people before they start academia, and even those within it, like topics that they might have faced within the academia that often is not spoken about at all. And even, for example, with misinformation, that's obviously not something as academics do, hopefully. But this does also link to science communication, in the side that it's so important to do this, and people often don't realize the importance of providing correct information even as an academic, because you're so used to talking to your colleagues, you might not realize that when you're talking to someone who's not your colleague, actually you using one word slightly differently might be interpreted in a completely different way, which is often where, going back to COVID-19, these problems come with anti-vaxxers and things.
Exactly. I have such a hard time telling my father, who's a journalist, that he keeps asking me, why does it take you so long to write a research paper? Because it's different from an article. You know, data needs to be checked twice, validated, thrice. And exactly. So it's very different from writing a 400-piece for a newspaper.
And I think it's a big skill. And I mean, we're not going to talk too much about science communication here, because again, this is a whole thing. But like, it is a very important thing, that, and I think that's why it was nice to have the spin-off, because it allowed this kind of other side of academia and other problems that aren't just somebody's personal research to be discussed.
For me, the spin-off series always felt like, you know, at the office, we gather with our colleagues for a coffee break and we start ranting about, oh, this and that, and it went wrong, and why is it like this and why like that? And like, we get all this emotion out, but it remains a corridor talk. Mm-hmm. And okay, many universities and institutes, they have started making efforts to improve the situation in academia in terms of equality, diversity, inclusion, as a short EDI or DEI, depending to whom you're talking to. But many things remained as hush-hush topic, or as a topic where, okay, let's find a solution, but then the solution they come up with is something that patches the wound, mm-hmm. but yes, it doesn't make the source that causes the wound to disappear. Mm-hmm. So the problem is there, it keeps on hurting us, but we put patches on mm-hmm. it and like yeah. it will pass. And then at some point you become having thick skin and you toughened up. And like
they
you hear these things.
At some point too, yes. and then they think that others should be going through the same. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Doesn't always lead to good things, I must
right.
say.
Yeah. And it was always very important for me to like start talking about these things openly and have them on record. Okay, many people go on social media and they share about these things. Some people do research about these things, but I wanted to do it in a more calm, relaxed environment, like put it on record and say that there are these problems. And if you're in academia, you obviously have faced them. Mm-hmm. If you haven't faced them and you don't know about them, then come out of the little space you have found yourself in, because these are big problems in academia. You can't be blind to their existence. Mm-hmm. And if you're from outside academia, you've never encountered them, you don't know how a painful environment academia sometimes can be. So I will end my monologue with this. It's like, so people from outside academia think often have this idea that we researchers have an easy life. I mean, there's no hard labor going into it. So why are we all so sad, depressed, upset, whatever? Mm-hmm. So it had to be on record and for the world outside to hear how we inside experience these things. Yeah. So it was also from that perspective.
I actually thought that people would think that scientists are such geniuses that they can resolve all these problems, but actually it's a shark tank oftentimes.
Yes, and it's a hard work. It's not like suddenly you have, you know, this light bulb idea like they show in the cartoon.
People
sometimes
fight for ideas here.
Yes.
So, yeah. But now I feel like it's just turning into another episode of spin-off series. Because once we start talking about this, it's very hard. Like, the box is open and everything, all the demons are coming out.
And you can see how passionate I am about it. I can go on monologuing for hours.
I think at some point you can write a review paper also on that harassment episodes, because you, I hope you still have those notes.
I do still
have
those notes.
Put them together. I think it's going to be really enough for a full review. Think about it, Anna. Maybe for next year.
Don't put ideas in me.
Well, you already have a lot of things on your plate. But I hope, though, that for next year there'll be as many exciting episodes. Mm-hmm. We already have quite a bunch of them in the pipeline. So stay tuned. We're not going to say more, I guess. No spoilers here.
No spoilers.
Yes, otherwise, I hope you had a very good year with us, the Science Basement podcast. Hope you learned a lot, as much as we did, and enjoyed the episodes as well.
Yeah, and if you actually have anything you'd like to hear about, also feel free to let us know and get in contact. And you want to be interviewed, I think Eliana was about to say, and share your research. Yeah, both sides we're open to anything, basically. So any kind of science we will happily learn about as hosts and as part of the TSB podcast team. So.
And maybe also, if you had a favorite episode, you can leave it as a comment so that we know which one you like the most.
Exactly. And you can reach us out either through our website, there's a contact form, or check out our social media. We are in Twitter and we are in Instagram. Oh, yes, that is. I'm so outdated.
It's not Twitter
that's
anymore.
So last year. But anyways, check us out there. Check out also all the amazing things that our guests shared that we mentioned today. There are more of them in the social media.
And the other episodes that we didn't mention as well, which
exactly,
are equally
as
interesting.
So. There are so many other ones. And as we said today, everybody was so prepared, so ready and beautiful. I don't know. Just all the praise. Just go listen to them and... I don't know. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Happy
Christmas,
Hanukkah.
Everybody.
Happy
Merry
New
Christmas.
Year.
Yes. Happy New Year. That's true. Happy holidays for those who don't celebrate Christmas. Exactly. I'm one of them. But yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, holidays.
Yeah. And
see you next year.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.